The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield, your number one news and talk station.
The Money Show brought to you by Old Mutual. Get great financial advice. Old Mutual is a licensed financial services provider. Good evening and welcome to The Money Show. We're watching to see what Moody's does this evening. They are reviewing their rating of South Africa. They put us on a negative watch the last time they had a sniff around our collective underwear drawer. They didn't like what they found and put us on the verge, on the precipice of a downgrade. It's not expected that they're going to push us into relegation this evening, but we're sitting pretty close. Talk about KPMG in just a moment. David Peacock from Sanlam Private Wealth in studio tonight as our market commentator. And this is his briefing. David, we need to talk. And we need to talk. Yes, we do. Look at me. Yes, we need to talk about Naspers. We need to talk about the vulnerability of the JSE to a single share. 20% of the value of the JSE is made up of Naspers. Naspers suddenly begins to look vulnerable when the Chinese authorities take a look at their biggest social media platforms and start accusing them of being complicit in espionage and all sorts of other things. Hold on a second. This could get quite scary or not. We'll talk to David Peacock about that in just a couple of minutes' time. We'll bring you some of the best bits from the week that was on The Money Show and, of course, play the Brutal Biz Quiz. I've got hot cash to give away to you if you are the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield.
Well, we invited KPMG onto The Money Show, but they're not doing interviews. They did issue a long statement today, at least the chief executive did, about their investigations into the work that they did for the Guptas. Remember, KPMG was the first to pull the plug on the Guptas in the same week that banks decided not to do business with them. And we still don't know what bombshell was uncovered in that fateful week. But there was the week that turned the tide against state capture. It was an important one. All aspects of the firm's work related to the Guptas robustly reviewed, says the chief executive, including everything from client acceptance. Why do you choose particular clients? They have a process, yet they still accepted the Guptas as clients. And then the execution and quality of the work done for them. And there were problems and issues found. And KPMG says individuals responsible are being held accountable. They're investigating the work they did. Also, part of the work that formed the Witch Hunted SARS. Remember that controversial report? They've done that, and the person who did that report left KPMG in March. The chief executive, Trevor Houle, saying that KPMG should have resigned the Gupta account earlier than March 2016. They should have stopped working for the Gupta company sooner than they did. Again, not too specific about what alleged transgressions would have led them to do this. There's still a lot of murkiness around this particular case. But clearly what they have found in their internal investigations is nothing to celebrate and nothing to commemorate. It also admits that none of the four partners who attended the Gupta wedding should have done so. They've suspended a lead audit partner, KPMG. They've also relieved two of their partners of board and executive positions. And it's good to see the private sector taking this so seriously. It would be nice if the National Prosecuting Authority would treat the emails with the same level of seriousness as members of the private sector are. It really would be nice.
702 and Cape Talk, The Money Show.
Well, it's been an emotional week for South Africa. Markets hit a record level on Monday. That brought happy emotions. The Rand had a little recovery rally. The president faced his eighth vote of no confidence. Then Donald Trump threatened to blow North Korea to smithereens, and Kim Jong-un threatened to blow America to smithereens. Today, though, the Rand running out of steam. The JSE back to level seen last week, and Kim and Trump are still shouting at each other. And the Rand has also lost the value that it gained earlier this week. Moody's, the ratings agency, has us teetering on negative watch, on the brink of junk, and will make a pronouncement on our rating this evening. It's not thought that they will cut us to junk, and if they do, it could get very messy indeed. Tabi Lioka is a senior economist at Argon Asset Management, on the line to us from Johannesburg this evening. Tabi Lioka, I mean, there are no real new reasons, fresh reasons for a downgrade tonight, are there?
No, actually, I have an announcement to make. So Moody's will not be announcing anything today. And I know they're very difficult to read because unlike S&P and Fitch, they can just come to the country and snoop around. And the assumption is that they could actually release a statement. And this time there is no statement to be released. They will be, no major event that is warranting a review committee meeting. So there's no announcement. What they will do is that they will release a credit opinion on Tuesday.
And what is the difference between a ratings announcement and a credit opinion?
I guess it will be a comment on some of the state-owned companies.
Now, one wonders, just how much more vulnerable or less vulnerable this makes us. I mean, to a ratings downgrade, a full downgrade come December, because that's anticipated to be the big one. Not all of the ratings agencies, once again, go off and do their sums and snoop, as you put it, I like that word, snoop around and do their interviews and try and assess whether or not we remain creditworthy. They all sort of come back again in December, don't they?
Fitch and S&P will review the country late November, I believe, and we haven't heard anything yet from Moody's when next they will come to the country.
Okay, but here we sit. I mean, political instability always a factor. I mean, the ratings agencies must watch our toings and froings, our comings and goings with a great deal of interest. Many of the people who rate us know us very well, better than some of us know ourselves. Our real worry, if we boil it down to the barest essentials, sure, the noise around political interference in government and corruption and all of that is one part of the story. The one part that we can fix if we choose to is growth, and we just don't seem to be willing to take the steps to get the growth needed to get the ratings agencies off our backs.
That's correct. On growth, I think that we cannot really grow given we can't see sustained growth in South Africa if we haven't sorted out some of the structural problems. And we have spoken about these structural problems without going into great details about it. I always say you cannot grow an economy sustainably when you have such high unemployment rates. And we need to have buy into and implement structural reform before we start seeing growth. And we actually haven't, we need to take the steps first before reaping the benefits of it. And I think we talk about the benefits, which is growth, before actually discussing the sowing of the seeds.
Yeah, I mean, that is the real crisis. I mean, our unemployment stats came out this week. We've still got unemployment officially at 27.7%, youth unemployment north of 55%. We know all of these stats. We're so used to the big numbers that are just almost meaningless, unless you're one of those people, of course, who's caught in that trap of unemployment. And then we look at this current quarter that we're in now, Tabi, and big companies are laying off big numbers of people. I can't imagine the third quarter numbers are going to be stable at all.
That's correct. We're seeing big bellwether companies, which is of concern, especially in the retail sector. And the problem with layoffs is that you have workers who will then lose the skills when they are unemployed, and especially when they now become discouraged workers and they stop looking for jobs. And it becomes increasingly difficult for them to get absorbed into the job market in future. And then again, if you have above 55% unemployment rate, what does that say about youth unemployment rate? What does that say about the future of the economy? So we keep talking about growth now, but my worry is also if you have such high numbers of unemployed youth, what is growth going to look like in the future?
Yeah.
So we are not really looking at, I think, talking about growth, and it's a bit worrisome because any reform means that you need to slow down. You may need to slow down growth as you look at, rejig the economy, reprioritize certain sectors, reprioritize education, and then you'll start seeing a takeoff in economic growth. And that needs to happen before we start seeing growth, and we're not seeing that or not doing enough or anything at all, but I don't think we're doing enough to start growing above the 5% that we need in order for us to start absorbing more people in the workforce.
I don't want to be accused of being a Pollyanna about this, but there are some signs of life. I don't want to say green shoots, but just before the green shoot pops out the ground and there's a little bump in the soil, just before it sticks through, my sense of it is business confidence perking up a little bit over the last couple of months as inflation has come down and as interest rates have started to be cut. There are those little bursts of optimism that are not going to be nearly enough to get us to where we need to go, but boy, at least it feels like we have stopped this death dive of the economy.
That's correct. I mean, I think there are sectors that can also support growth, such as the agricultural sector. There's great potential there. There's also great potential in the tourism sector. I think that more engagement between the Minister of Finance and Labour and government is important. I do know that the Minister has met with a lot of people from business and Labour, and I think we'll start seeing the benefits of that engagement in future. But I think that, you know, the more time he spends trying to allay the fears, I think the more we'll start seeing business become confident in him and also in investing in South Africa. I also think that we'll have to see what also the National Treasury does in terms of the medium policy statement, the NTDPS, and you know, we could be surprised, positively surprised. And that could also be a boost to the economy. But you are, or at least rather the sentiment, but you are right about, you know, inflation coming down. That's also very important. Interest rates cuts, and we do expect more cuts in the later part of this year. And those will be positive for business.
And those only matter to people with money, with debt, with jobs, with credit lines, people with prospects. That economic data only matters if you've got a stake in the economy. If you have no stake in the economy, if you're unemployed, none of this economic data means squat. It means nothing. Because you're unemployed, there are no prospects. Boom. That's the end of the line for you. And that's what is so debilitating about it. Thabo Leoka, the senior economist at Argon Asset Management. Thank you very much.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
David Peacock from Sanlam Private Wealth is our guest this evening. Let's have a look at Naspers, please, if we could, David Peacock. I mean, Tencent, it's got a business called WeChat. Many people in South Africa use WeChat. WeChat is one of the most popular social networks in China. And WeChat is one of three social networks under investigation in China by the Chinese government for spreading all kinds of rumors and innuendos and threats of terrorism and all sorts of things. And the share price of Naspers came under pressure today. Just explain to me what's going on there as best you can make out.
Okay, Bruce. So very simply, there's three social media platforms that are being investigated at the moment by the very scary Cyber Administration of China, which is the short abbreviation for that is CAC. And people
feel the same way about it, I'm sure.
And they are looking at Tencent's WeChat, Sino's Weibo, and Baidu's Tibo. So it's not specifically to Tencent. It's across the market effectively. So unfortunately, in terms of Naspers in South Africa, Tencent makes up a very significant component of the underlying assets and the revenue and growth of that business. So from that perspective, unfortunately, because of the fact that that Naspers makes up effectively 20% of the all-share index at the moment, any movement in Tencent will have a sort of a knock-on effect in terms of the price of Naspers. So, you know, if you look at the move on Tencent, rather, it was down, I think, about sort of 5% on the day, whereas Naspers was down, I think, also about 5% at one stage, sort of rallied a little bit right at the end. I think it was down sort of 2.5% to 3%. I think the risk to portfolios is the fact that it is such a heavy weighting in terms of the all-share index. So, you know, the concern in many respects that we've seen in the last while is people are worried about the fear of missing out. And from that perspective, that has pushed the share price. But
Naspers has gone to very nearly 2,000 rand a share in recent weeks, trading quite comfortably around 1,900 rand.
Correct.
And you say it makes up 20% of the value of the JSE. Now, the value of the JSE is X trillion, but let's say if it was valued at 1 trillion rand, 200 billion of that would be Naspers. And
correct.
If Naspers falls 10%, then that's a big chunk of the value of your investments, whether or not you even know that your pension fund's invested in Naspers or you invested in an index. You are vulnerable in your retirement savings to what an industry regulator in China decides to do to social media in that country. Suddenly, the knock-on effect on Naspers in South Africa is pretty dramatic.
Exactly. So it's a very similar situation to British American Tobacco, where the FDA also said that they want to reduce the amount of nicotine in cigarettes going forward. So very similar situation in terms of a regulatory authority that's sort of putting pressure on the underlying shares. And again, British American Tobacco is also a fairly decent component in terms of the overall all share index. So, you know, the fact that NASPAS is up sort of 30-odd percent so far from January this year, and up about, I think, 14% sort of on 1 year. I think, you know, investors need to just be careful in terms of, you know, if you're heading towards 20-odd percent in your portfolio, it's probably prudent to just trim back a little bit, because ultimately in terms of the Tencent business, it's still growing aggressively. You know, it's got mail.ru, it's got a whole plethora of opportunities in terms of the new wave of how you use social media and the knock-on effects in terms of purchasing things, travel, all that sort of thing. So from that perspective, it's very good. But just from a prudent perspective, just to trim back a little bit is probably not a bad idea.
I see today S&P has upgraded Anglo-American, it downgraded Anglo-American about a year and a half ago. Yep. And then the recent results were pretty good, much better than expected. Commodity prices have perked up quite a lot, and S&P saying Anglo-American can have its investment grade back. That's good news.
It is good news. Unfortunately, counteracted again by the Chinese early on in the day, with the China Steel Industry Association said that recent surges in steel price futures was not driven by market demand or supply cuts, but rather by misunderstanding by some institutions. So unfortunately, in spite of the fact that they've been upgraded, commodities were down sort of 2-odd percent or 3-odd percent across the board, on the basis that the expectations for growth going forward are a lot better than they potentially are. Ultimately, time will tell whether, you know, the sort of China Steel Industry Association is really just pandering to the market to, you know, to keep prices possibly a little bit more level than they possibly should be. But again, it's very good to see that, you know, in terms of the restructuring of Anglo American and the benefits that you're starting to see coming through in terms of Kumba, their results coming through, the decent dividend, and obviously the knock-on effect to Anglo's. We saw Exxaro's numbers out today, their sort of guidance, which also looked quite positive. And obviously in terms of a dividend for Exxaro, you know, to be expected of sort of maybe around 2.50 rand. So again, very positive for Anglo. So, you know, I think, you know, on weakness, these commodity stocks, and specifically Anglo's, are probably looking quite attractive at the moment.
Were you excited, intrigued, interested in? Nobody was blown away by Old Mutual's results and the sort of next step in the breakup of Old Mutual into its four component parts.
We've known how this is going to play out, or I think that Bruce Hempel has been very good in terms of laying out to the market exactly the process that they're going to follow in terms of how they're going to do this. So, you know, from that perspective, I would say we've still got some time, because ultimately, you know, this needs to be done to a greater extent by the end of 2018. So there's still quite a sort of a line ahead of us in terms of how that actually plays out. From a valuation point of view, and just the various sums of the parts, I think that you're probably looking at close to sort of 40 Rand. But again, the fact that you've got this sort of fairly long time frame ahead before that actually comes to fruition, you're unfortunately going to continue to probably see the share sort of moving sideways, I would say. And as you say, you know, not really excited by the sort of numbers coming out.
Are you at all concerned about the shouting match that's happening between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un? I know the gold market this week has been terribly excited. I mean, we've seen the gold price rally and rally strongly.
Bruce, it's a difficult one. You know, I would say to you that I think from a concern point of view, we probably have two of the most hot-headed people in politics that we've had in a significantly long period of time. So, you know, unfortunately, that could be fairly dangerous for the world. So maybe it's not so bad living in the southern tip of Africa, where it's a little bit safer from the heat. But, you know, as one of your other commentators said, you know, last night, if these two do have a go at each other, you know, that could be catastrophic for, you know, for financial markets. And I really hope we don't get to the point where that is an issue.
Yeah, most certainly. And then just finally, having a look at the market on the week, it started with so much promise. We were in record territory, over 56,000 on the All Share Index. And I know nothing goes up in a straight line, but it was nice to believe for a moment that we could be seeing a breakout in the value of shares.
Bruce, maybe that will continue. We had a consolidation of events happening. We had commodities running quite nicely. We had the effect of the interest rate cut that improved view of the banks and South African economy. And the fact that on the basis that we may have more interest rate cuts in the next while, that would actually be quite positive for growth. So I think we had sort of a culmination of positive effects that pushed the whole market firmer. And, as we moved through last week and this week, we saw quite a nice pickup in terms of volumes on the JSE, because that has been a concern of mine for some time, is that the volumes that have been moving our markets have actually been very thin and quite a lot below where they were sort of this time last year. So I think that's positive. So does that potentially say that foreigners are coming back into our market in terms of saying, as an emerging market, South Africa has been left behind relative to how other emerging markets have potentially performed? So maybe, we are starting to see that. I think that in terms of our rating review next week, I don't think we're going to have a rating downgraded at this stage. I would hope that, from a perspective of the midterm budget in October or the interim budget that we're going to see, I think they'll probably wait to see that. And then we've got a whole lot of political issues that are working through the system by the end of the year. So from that perspective, I would say maybe hold on. We will potentially be continuing with a better market as we proceed through the year.
David Peacock from Sanlam Private Wealth.
The Money Show. Bruce is on Twitter at Bruce Business.
Welcome to The Money Show. The Money Show brought to you by Old Mutual. Get great financial advice. Old Mutual is a licensed financial services provider. On the next Money Show, I've got the Discovery founder and chief executive Adrian Gore in studio for our Make Money Mondays personal edition interview. Has he ever made a money mistake? I wonder. He's an actuary. Of course he's not made a mistake, but I bet he has. I'll also bring you a business book called Make Africa Work, author Greg Mills and others claiming to be a handbook for economic success on the continent. That's all coming up on your next Money Show.
The Money Show.
Your number one news and talk station.
The Brutal Biz Quiz in the next 7 or 8 minutes' time. I'll introduce you to that in a moment. But also, it's interesting to see Maria Ramos as part of something called the G30. This is a prestigious group of 30 individuals. And the group of 30 individuals try to understand and better understand international economic and financial issues. And they are been brought by invitation. And the G30 has introduced a couple of new members. It was founded in 1978, private, non-profit, international body, composed, they say, of senior participants from the public and private sectors and academia. And the invitation goes to only a handful of individuals. Who else might be on the G30? Well, Ben Bernanke is there, former chairman of the US Fed. Mark Carney, the governor of the Bank of England's there. Mervyn King, also former governor of the Bank of England. He's a member of the House of Lords, of course. And others are on this particular G30 group. And Maria Ramos has been included in there as well. It's a real feather in her cap to be included in an auspicious group of individuals. Well, time to catch up on the biggest stories of the week as we bring you some of the best bits. The historical secret ballot, which was agreed to by the Speaker on Monday, happened on Tuesday, and it gave the ANC its best chance so far to begin a process of self-correction. As it turned out, just 1 in 7 ANC MPs are thought to have voted against the president. But it was enough to fire yet another shot across the bows of the Zuma administration. Now, my favorite bit this week was you telling us how you felt about what you had witnessed in the debate and what you'd witnessed in the vote, which came out, of course, on Tuesday evening. The president did survive by his smallest margin ever. His 8th vote of no confidence, and most of you, frankly, were devastated.
I just want to congratulate our organization. They must now give us space to deal with this matter internally in the ANC.
Tati and Santon, thank you. What about you, Celesta, in Florida Hills?
Bruce, I am so disappointed. I don't know what to do. You know, once again, the ANC has proved to us, the South Africans, that they're there for themselves and for Zuma. But you know what? Come 2019, and we are set to vote them out. I am very disappointed. I am crying. My heart is so broken.
All I can say is, ANC, they are so wicked. They don't care about people. MPs are so hypocrites. They don't care about our voices, our future, our economy. All they care about is this corrupt ANC. What about people who died for our freedom? If they can't hear our voices, exactly.
Lugelo in Secunda. I'm getting quite emotional myself. Yandisa in Kempton Park.
This is not what I was expecting, especially since we put our hope on the MPs. How can this corruption go on? Why are they protecting Jacob Zuma? Why?
That, I mean, I was stunned by the emotional outpouring. I hadn't expected it, their vote to be considerably different from that. If anything, I expected fewer MPs to vote against him. But I was stunned and you know, taken aback by your responses. It was really, really powerful. We also got in contact with some key political players to get their response to the vote. You'll hear the immediate responses of the DA's John Steenhuisen, Saftu Zwelinzi Mavavi, and, of course, the UDM's Bantu Holomisa as well.
I think the ANC are seeing now what a major electoral liability is and how he's going to cost them going into the election.
We want to salute those very brave leaders who have now seen enough and who followed their conscience to try and defend the integrity of the ANC. And there were not many enough, unfortunately. The ANC have now turned out to be a defender of all of this state capture and pillaging.
Well, firstly, the UDM accepts the result, and secondly, we are disappointed or perturbed by the choice of the ANC, which has decided to side with this irreparable corrupt president. The people of South Africa are given another middle finger for the eighth time by the ANC people. So they have chosen to side with Zuma against the wishes of the people.
Bantu Olomisa, and before that, Zwelinzi Mavavi and John Steenhuisen. He's from the DA, of course. The business sector responded by Bonang Mohale, Chief Executive of Business Leadership South Africa. He pulls no punches in his role as being the voice of big business in South Africa. He wasn't wildly impressed either by the stance taken by MPs.
For us as business, we say, look, in December, it's only 4 months away. The worst case scenario is that we will live with this kleptocratic president until 2019. It's only 2 years. In the time span of a nation, it is absolutely nothing, absolutely nothing. But, you know, we respect democracy. And today was the triumph of constitutionalism. The people of this country now know, have understood, will analyze. The voters are not stupid. They will act accordingly in December. They will do the same in 2019. But as business, we really just want to play our part and make sure that we are absolutely exemplary in deeds, not just in words, in transforming the economy of this country so that it looks like us. It will make it easy when we say we do stand for this notion of inclusive economic growth and transformation, for the protection of our key institution, and that we are positioning business as a national asset, then to be believable.
Doesn't that become much harder to do business? Doesn't it become much harder to do that?
Much, much harder, for sure. But during periods of social change and strife, that's when entrepreneurship thrives. I'm hoping that especially small and medium enterprises will seize the opportunity, find the gaps, set themselves up for the upward swing when the rising tide will lift all boats. This too will pass.
Like a kidney stone. Takes a long time and it hurts, apparently. Make Money Monday special edition guest. By the way, on Monday, remind you just that we've got Adrian Gore, Chief Executive of Discovery, coming in. I'm looking forward to catching up with him. But our Make Money Monday special edition guest this week, Monique Stradom. She rose to prominence along with Kali, of course, after being kidnapped and held hostage for 4 months in the Philippines. We talked to her about money and we also talked to her about her first job.
I wanted to go to drama school.
Okay.
in Pretoria, and there wasn't money to send me. So my dad said, no, you've got to go to work. And the only job I could get was in the military base, because we lived in the military base, and I didn't have a car, and I had to walk to the to my job. So I was the assistant of the matron of the hospital.
Oof.
Oh, I know. I died. I lasted 6 months.
And it wouldn't have been a massively paying job either. So, I mean, did you ever get scrape enough to get to drama school?
You know, I fell in love, and he had a motorbike, so I bought a motorbike with, I think, my third paycheck. I took a loan out to buy a motorbike, and that was one of my worst investments. And then I eventually sold it, and then...
Sorry, was the motorbike or the love affair?
let's not talk about that one. The motorbike was lots of fun. I can add that. And then I went to study the year after that. I sold the bike and I saved some money, and then my dad said, okay, I'll help you get a loan at the bank, and you've proven that you really want to go and do that. And then I went to study.
Monique Stradom talking to us earlier on this week, Make Money Monday's special edition guest. Those are some of the best bits from the week that was on The Money Show. Time for the Biz Quiz with MTN this evening. I've got 2,000 rand up for grabs if you are the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz on this Friday night. Your first question tonight in the Brutal Biz Quiz on this Friday evening. Which German car maker is headquartered in Ingolstadt? I think that's easy enough. Give us a call now on 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702. If you want to play the Brutal Biz Quiz and be in line to win 2,000 rand.
It's time to put your business knowledge to the test. The Biz Quiz with MTN on The Money Show.
Which motor manufacturer is located at Ingolstadt, Wesley?
Bruce, I think it is Audi.
Vorsprung, absolutely right. We spoke to the head of Audi South Africa, Trevor Hill, this week about the future of cities and cars and also that new car smell. And it turns out you could buy the new car smell in a bottle. So for people with old cars, there's hope. In April 2000, a South African couple was taken hostage while holidaying in the Philippines. What are their names?
Oh, my goodness, Bruce. I don't know the answer there, but I know the lady was just on the radio.
Ah,
so I knew the first one.
Well, I'm afraid the first one's not going to be enough, Wesley. But well, you're the right chies to play the Brutal Biz Quiz. There was a couple taken hostage while on holiday in the Philippines in April 2000. They were held hostage for 4 months. And one of those hostages was our Make Money Monday special edition guest this week. What was the name of the couple? I'd like to know their first names and their surname. Please let us take a call this evening on 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. Zulfikar in Lansdowne. Hello, Zulfikar.
Hi, Monique in Kalisredo.
Absolutely right. In the wake of the release of Stephen McGowan, we spoke to Monique at this week's Make Money Mondays feature. What is the significance this week, Zulfikar? And you've got to pay attention. Three numbers for you. The numbers were 198, 177, and the number 9.
Those were the numbers. The vote in the National Assembly.
What? I looked at it and I didn't get it. My producer presented these numbers to me and said, you're not going to get that, and I didn't. And you did. So, Zulfikar, you're a superhero. 198, those were the number of votes that the president got in his favor. A massive 177 against and 9 abstentions. It was by the skin of his teeth that the president survived the vote of no confidence this week. Of which country is Pyongyang the capital, Zulfikar? Pyongyang is the capital of which?
North Korea.
Correct. Absolutely right, Zulfikar. And then I'm going to ask you one final question. Who did President Jacob Zuma say he had nominated for a position as head of the BRICS Bank in December 2015? Except we know that nomination never happened. That person was never offered the job, and he just lost his position as finance minister as the president scrambled for an explanation.
Finance Minister.
Na, 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 na. Zulfikar.
No.
It's,
I just can't.
Oh, man. Zulfikar, I'm so sorry. You're doing so well. This particular individual is a former financial advisor. And he once told me in front of an audience of 1,000 people that while he was finance minister, people would still phone him because they thought he was still their financial advisor. It's so funny. Manecha. Let's try Manecha. Who is the person?
Manecha, yes.
Ndlantsa Nene. Absolutely right. You're 2,000 rand better off, Manecha. Well done to you. You squeezed in at the final hurdle. Ndlantsa Nene, absolutely right. And I've just made your weekend, Manecha, and I'm delighted to have done so. And Ndlantsa Nene has contributed to your weekend as well. Jacob Zuma infamously removed Ndlantsa Nene of the Nene-geddon moment on the 9th of December 2015, 9:12. Nene never joined the bank. He's working in the private sector today, and I think he's delighted. Manager, that has got you 2,000 rand in cash. Well done to you.